يسألونك عن الشهر الحرام قتال فيه قل قتال فيه كبير وصد عن سبيل الله وكفر به والمسجد الحرام وإخراج أهله منه أكبر عند الله والفتنة أكبر من القتل ولا يزالون يقاتلونكم حتى يردوكم عن دينكم إن استطاعوا ومن يرتدد منكم عن دينه فيمت وهو كافر فأولئك حبطت أعمالهم في الدنيا والآخرة وأولئك أصحاب النار هم فيها خالدون.
People ask you about fighting in the holy month. Say, fighting in it is an awesome sin, but barring people from the way of Allah, disbelieving in Allah, and denying entry into the holy mosque and expelling its inmates from it are more awesome acts in the sight of Allah, and persecution is even more heinous than killing. They will not cease fighting against you till they turn you from your religion if they can. So remember well that whoever turns away from his religion and dies in the state of unbelief, their work will go to waste in this world and in the next. Such men are destined for the fire, and it is there that they will abide. And denying entry into the holy mosque and expelling its inmates from it, this relates to a certain incident in Rajab. 2 after Hijri, the Prophet sent an expedition of 8 persons to Nakhla, which lies between Mecca and Taif. He directed them to follow the movements of the Quraysh and gathering information about their plans, but not to engage in fighting. On their way, they came across a trade caravan belonging to the Quraysh and ambushed it. They killed one person and captured the rest along with their belongings and took them to Medina. They did this at a time when the month of Rajab was approaching its end and Shaban was about to begin. It was therefore doubtful whether the attack was actually carried out in one of the sacred months, that is, Rajab or not. But the Quraysh and the Jews who were secretly in league with them, as well as the hypocrites, made great play of this and used it as a weapon in their propaganda campaign against the Muslims. They pointed out the contradiction between the claims of the Muslims to true religion on the one hand and their not hesitating to shed blood in a sacred month on the other. This verse aims to answer these objections. The essence of what is said here is that fighting during the sacred months is without doubt an evil act. It points out those people who had continually subjected their kith and kin to untold wrong for 13 years merely because they believed in the one God were not competent to make such an objection. Not only had the Muslims been driven from their homes, they had the way to the holy mosque closed to them, a bar which had not been opposed by anyone during the course of some 2,000 years. With this record of mischief and misconduct, it was not for them to raise such an outcry at a minor ambush, and especially so when the incident had taken place without the approval of the Prophet. The whole incident was in fact no more than an irresponsible act on the part of some members of the Islamic community. It should be remembered that when on their return those people went with captives and booty to visit the Prophet, he expressly pointed out to them that he had not permitted them to fight. Not only that, he declined to receive the public exchequer's share of their booty, which indicated that their booty was considered unlawful. The Muslims in general also severely reproached the people responsible for the incident, and in fact nobody in Medina applauded what they had done. They will not cease fighting against you till they turn you from your religion if they can. A few simple-hearted Muslims whose minds were seized by a mistaken concept of righteousness and pacifism were influenced by the above objections which had been raised by the polytheists of Mecca and the Jews. In this verse, the believers are being asked not to entertain the hope that they might clear the air and promote understanding and goodwill by adopting an over-lenient stance towards their opponents. The objections of the latter were not motivated by the desire to find out the truth. Their true purpose was nothing but vilification. What particularly irked the adversaries of the Muslims was that they believed in a religion of their own and were inviting the whole world to accept it. Hence, as long as the Muslims continue to believe in Islam, and as long as their opponents remain stubborn in their disbelief, the existing chasm between the two groups was bound to remain. Moreover, the enemies whom they confronted were not to be considered ordinary enemies. Those who wanted to deprive a person of his belongings or land were in fact enemies of a relatively much less dangerous kind than those who sought to turn him away from his faith. While the former sought to harm his worldly interests, the latter were bent upon hurling him into the eternal torment in the hereafter.
إِنَّ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَالَّذِينَ هَاجَرُوا وَجَاهَدُوا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ أُولَئِكَ يَرْجُونَ رَحْمَةَ اللَّهِ وَاللَّهُ غَفُورٌ رَحِيمٌ
On the contrary, those who believed and forsook their hearth and home and strove in the way of Allah, such may rightly hope for the mercy of Allah, for Allah is all-forgiving, all-merciful. Those who believed and forsook their hearth and home and strove. Jihad denotes doing one's utmost to achieve something. It is not the equivalent of war, for which the Arabic word is qital. Jihad has a wider connotation and embraces every kind of striving in God's cause. A mujahid is a person who is single-mindedly devoted to his cause, who uses his mental capacity to reflect how best he can achieve it, propagates it by word of mouth and by the pen, uses his physical energy in striving to serve it, spends all the resources at his disposal to promote it, employs all the force he commands in confronting any power which might stand in its way, and whenever necessary, does not shirk risking his very life for it. All this is jihad. Jihad in the way of God is that strife in which man engages exclusively to win God's good pleasure, to establish the supremacy of his religion, and to make his word prevail.
يَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ الْخَمْرِ وَالْمَيْسِرِ قُلْ فِيهِمَا إِثْمٌ كَبِيرٌ وَمَنَافِعُ لِلنَّاسِ وَإِثْمُهُمَا أَكْبَرُ مِنْ نَفْعِهِمَا وَيَسْأَلُونَكَ مَاذَا يُنْفِقُونَ قُلِ الْعَفْوَ كَذَلِكَ يُبَيِّنُ اللَّهُ لَكُمُ الْآيَاتِ لَعَلَّكُمْ تَتَفَكَّرُونَ
They ask you about wine and games of chance. Say, in both these there is great evil. Even though there is some benefit for men, their evil is greater than their benefit. They ask, what should we spend in the way of Allah? Say, whatever you can spare. In this way, Allah clearly expounds His injunctions to you that you may reflect upon them. Even though there is some benefit for men, their evil is greater than their benefit. This is the first injunction concerning intoxicating drinks and gambling, and here the matter has been left merely as an expression of disapproval. This was a preliminary step designed to prepare the minds of people for the acceptance of their prohibition. The injunction prohibiting the performance of prayer when in state of intoxication came later, and ultimately alcohol, gambling, and the like were categorically prohibited.
في الدنيا والآخرة ويسألونك عن اليتامى قل إصلاح لهم خير وإن تخالطوهم فإخوانكم والله يعلم المفسد من المصلح وَلَوْ شَاءَ اللَّهُ لَأَعْنَتَكُمْ إِنَّ اللَّهَ عَزِيزٌ حَكِيمٌ
Both in regard to this world and the next. They question you concerning orphans. Say, to deal with them in the way which is to their good, that is best. And if you intermix your expenses and living with them, there is no harm, for they are your brothers. Allah knows the mischievous from the righteous, and had Allah willed, He would indeed have imposed on you exacting conditions. But He is all-powerful as well as all-wise. They question you concerning orphans. Say, to deal with them in the way which is to their good, that is best. Before this verse was revealed, many severe injunctions had already been revealed regarding the protection of orphans' property. It had been ordained that people should not even draw near to the property of the orphan, and that those who wrongfully eat the properties of orphans only fill their bellies with fire. Because of these severe injunctions, the orphans' guardians were so overawed that they even separated the food and drink of the orphans from their own. They felt anxious lest anything belonging to the orphans became mixed with their own. It is for this reason that they inquired of the Prophet, peace be upon him, what the proper form of their dealings with orphans should be.
وَلَا تَنْكِحُوا الْمُشْرِكَاتِ حَتَّى يُؤْمِنُوا وَلَأَمَةٌ مُؤْمِنَةٌ خَيْرٌ مِّن مُشْرِكَةٍ وَلَوْ أَعْجَبَتْكُمْ ولا تنكحوا المشركين حتى يؤمنوا ولعبد مؤمن خير من مشرك ولو أعجبكم أولئك يدعون إلى النار والله يدعو إلى الجنة والمغفرة بإذنه ويبين آياته للناس لعلهم يتذكرون.
Marry not the women who associate others with Allah in His divinity until they believe. For a believing slave girl is better than a free respectable woman who associates others with Allah in His divinity, even though she might please you. Likewise, do not give your women in marriage to men who associate others with Allah in His divinity until they believe. For a believing slave is better than a free, respectable man who associate others with Allah in His divinity, even though he might please you. Such people call you towards the fire, and Allah calls you by His leave towards paradise and forgiveness. And He makes His injunctions clear to people so that they may take heed. Such people call you towards the fire. This is the reason for and the wisdom underlying the injunction mentioned above prohibiting marriage links with polytheists. Marriage does not consist merely of sexual relations between a man and a woman. It is a relationship which has a deep social, moral, and emotional implications. If established between a believer and a polytheist, this kind of relationship has many possible outcomes. On the one hand, it is possible that because of the influence of the believing spouse, the other partner, the family, and the future generations may become receptive to Islamic beliefs and to the Islamic way of life. On the other hand, it is also possible that the spouse who is a polytheist may influence the thinking and mode of living of the believing spouse, the family, and the future generations. Moreover, this relationship may promote in that family a hodgepodge of Islam, downright atheism and polytheism, which, however welcome to non-Muslims, is in no way acceptable to Islam. No true believer can run the risk that either the ideas and lifestyles which are organically related to atheism and polytheism may flourish among the members of his family, or that some aspect of his own life may bear the impress of atheism or polytheism.